Air America Mornings, radio's only progressive morning news magazine.
It's 6 minutes past the hour. Good morning, people. It's Air America Mornings, and thank you so much for being with us on this Tuesday, the second day of May 2006. Now, you know, this is a Tuesday. This is a day when even if everybody was up and perky on Monday, you know that Tuesday, people's behinds are dragging, except Chris Lopresto, who's dancing in the back. Are you listening to a soundtrack from some disco CD or something?
No. I'm just thinking back to last night.
Oh, here we go.
First, the Mets won 2-1, and then the Yankees lost to the Red Sox.
Oh, that makes
to actually David Ortiz.
Ah, Big Poppy.
Yes, I don't understand why they don't walk that guy.
I don't know. They walk Barry Bonds, and nobody knows if he can still play. But when it comes to somebody like Pujols and Big Poppy, it's like, oh, go pitch to him, pitch to him.
What a great night.
And we'll be right back with more Inside Sports after this. No, only kidding. How the rest of you guys doing? Ron Dodd?
Oh, I'm dragging a little bit
today.
You're
dragging a little bit today?
I heard that a lot of people had bad Mondays, and I think I'm still a little hungover from a bad Monday.
From a bad Monday. John Crimmings, how about you?
I'm doing all right.
John is unflappable, man. John is doing okay no
matter
what.
I'm doing all right. That doesn't sound great. I don't know. Is that?
All things considered.
This isn't all things considered. This is the Mark Riley Show. What are you talking about? What are you, crazy? Thanks so much for being with us, and we got some news for you, believe it or not. Hundreds of thousands, I think if you add it all up, it's probably a couple million people, took to the streets of America's cities and towns standing up for immigrant rights. And we'll tell you all about that. And some really bizarre stuff that came out of some people yesterday in response to those immigrant demonstrations. Iran goes off on the U.S., says that Bush contemplates a nuclear strike, and they want the U.N. to do something about it. Fat chance. A former top CIA spy says President Bush could have had Zarqawi killed. In fact, Zarqawi was tracked every day for a year. We'll tell you about that. Joe Biden, senior senator on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, wants to partition Iraq into three regions. He wrote that in the New York Times op-ed. The FBI sought personal information on about 3,500 U.S. citizens. We don't know if you were one of them, but we can imagine what might have happened if you were. Yes, hundreds of thousands of people across America took to the streets. And if you take it all together, it has to have been several million people all told. 400,000 to the streets of Chicago, including immigrants from not just Mexico, not just from South America or Central America, which is the stereotypical image of the immigrant in this country. Immigrants from Poland, immigrants from Ireland, immigrants from other places took to the streets of Chicago as well. And that is a really, really good thing. 500,000 at least in Los Angeles. And I say that because the cops estimated about 300,000. They always lowball these estimates. And I get convinced after a while that when you lowball the number of people, whether it's an anti-war protest, a gay rights protest, whatever. When you lowball, you minimize the impact, in my judgment, of these things. It's very easy for the media to say, well, hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands. When it comes to that, when you say tens of thousands, you could be talking about 10,000 or you could be talking about 99,000. There's a big difference between the two. But if you say tens of thousands, you know, people don't have to think about it anymore. Well, okay, well, 10,000 people came out. Altogether, it has to have been several million people. Cities and towns in America's heartland were affected, just like the East Coast and West Coast, which are the stereotypical impact points of immigration, both legal and illegal. Immigrants, in fact, are everywhere. And this issue has divided the nation, the progressive community, the business community, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, even the immigrant communities themselves. Here is a protester in Chicago, Herminio Yamas, expressing his feelings.
It makes me feel less than human sometimes because, you know, it's sad that I don't think of myself of being an illegal human being, you know. I came to this country the wrong way, but I didn't know any other way.
On the other hand, here's one immigrant by the name of Claudia Spencer who has no tolerance whatsoever for people who come in without the right papers.
The only thing they are demonstrating they are demonstrating with certainty is that they are still bona fide members of the third world.
Talk about pulling the ladder up behind you. Wow, that's some scary stuff coming from Ms. Spencer, who I believe was in D.C. Expressing her feelings. But that's the great thing about being in America. Folks can, in fact, express their feelings no matter how whack they may be. The media is going to be telling you throughout the day today, when you pick up your newspapers, when you watch this stuff on TV, that the economic impact of yesterday and the protests, because it wasn't just protests. People actually stayed off their jobs. Businesses ended up closing. Businesses that had large immigrant workforces, again, meatpacking plants, places like that. Don't believe for a moment that the economic impact was spotty. Business owners across the country know very well not just the impact of immigrant labor, but the impact of immigrant buying power as well. That's why you find many companies, for example, like Goya Foods, which is based here in the New York area. And I'm not sure how many people across the country know about Goya, but they are a huge, huge chain of, well, actually, it's a food business where they sell canned goods and that sort of thing, specifically to Latino consumers. And they, in fact, stood in solidarity with the immigrant protests across the country. That's why many businesses across the country did, in fact, close their doors in solidarity. Iran goes off, says that President Bush contemplates a nuclear strike, and they want the United Nations to take action. They call the failure to rule out a nuclear strike on the part of the president and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice illegal and insolent threats, end quote. U.N. Ambassador from Iran Javad Zarif sent a letter to Secretary General Kofi Annan detailing Iran's problems with the recent statements by the administration. Of course, the U.S., Britain, and France all want to ramp up pressure to stop Tehran from nuclear enrichment. They want the new Security Council resolution that would allow enforcement under certain circumstances through military action. Of course, China and Russia oppose both sanctions and a military strike. Outgoing White House spokesman Scott McClellan doesn't seem to leave a lot of wiggle room as far as the U.S. position is concerned.
Their latest steps that they have taken only further increase the concern of the international community that they are developing nuclear weapons under the cover of a civilian program.
Now, when he says the international community, he's basically talking about us, all right? Let's not mince words here. They may cloak it, and you hear Condoleezza Rice say the same kind of thing. They may well cloak it in the rhetoric of the world is really concerned about this. The fact of the matter is that America is really concerned about this. And what then comes is the following question. Can Iran ever convince the United States? Could the Ahmadinejad regime in Tehran ever convince America that it wants nuclear technology just for peaceful uses? I'm not at all sure whether that is, in fact, something that could happen at this point. A former top CIA spy says that President Bush could have had Musab al-Zarqawi killed. In fact, Zarqawi was tracked every day for a year. Michael Scheuer tells ABC's Four Corners that a raid on a camp that contains Zarqawi before the Iraq War was called off for diplomatic reasons. Scheuer is the author of Imperial Hubris. Chris Lopresto, you may remember we talked to him a while back.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day, he was anonymous there for a little while. People didn't know exactly who he was. Well, he was in charge of the bin Laden unit of the CIA for 6 years before he resigned in 2004. According to Scheuer, the National Security Council was trying to woo the French at that point and did not want to seem like the U.S. was a bunch of gunslingers and therefore ended up saying essentially, no, we're not going to, at this point, go after al-Zarqawi. And I think that they may have lived to perhaps regret that particular decision. At this point, Lord knows when they'll get another shot at the guy, because it seems like they can't get anybody. Can't get bin Laden, can't get Zarqawi, can't get Zawahiri. Is there anyone they can, in fact, get? I'm not at all sure about that. Now, there's another story that came out, and this is a very, very interesting one. Many of you may remember that Raw story submitted some information back in February, reported in February, that CIA officer Valerie Plame, you know her, the one that was outed, was working on Iran at the time she was outed. In fact, working on trying to plot their nuclear, Iran's nuclear technology capability. She was the one inside the agency working undercover to try and figure out exactly where Iran was with that. Well, apparently, now the mainstream media has picked it up. It looks like David Schuster from MSNBC had this to say about Valerie Plame.
Intelligence sources say Valerie Wilson was part of an operation 3 years ago tracking the proliferation of nuclear weapons material into Iran. And the sources allege that when Mrs. Wilson's cover was blown, the administration's ability to track Iran's nuclear ambitions was damaged as well.
Now, you heard that, right? America's ability to track Iran's nuclear ambition was damaged when Valerie Plame was outed. And yet the White House continues to say over and over and over again that this was no big deal. That Valerie Plame being outed was no big, because she wasn't working on anything undercover. Sound a little fishy to you at this point? You hear those drums. It was a full day of sports yesterday, and here's Larry Hardesty with the Air America Morning Sports Report to tell us all about it. Larry, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Mark. Good morning, everybody. Let's head down south, where a Duke University committee recommended the lacrosse team resume play next season, but under strict supervision. You know, a third of the current players have been cited in recent years for incidents from underage drinking to public urination. Amazingly, the report didn't consider the rape allegations that caused the season to be canceled in the first place. Also, today is primary day in Durham for DA Mike Nafong and two Democratic challengers. Yesterday, a defense attorney filed a motion to have Nafong removed from the Duke rape case, accusing him of using the investigation for political gain.
Ooh.
In the NBA, the LA Clipper franchise won their first playoff series in 30 years.
Whoa!
You know, when they were the Buffalo Braves.
Yeah.
Coutinho Mobley and Corey Maggette combined for 46 in their 101-83 win over Denver. Dallas completed the four-game sweep of Memphis, 102-76. Mavs forward Dirk Nowitzki topped all scores with 27, and he's happy to finish the Grizzlies off early.
We didn't want to drag the series out and let the momentum change, and then next thing you know, it's a 3-3. So we wanted to get this out of the way, and I'm glad we showed a lot of killer instinct today, and that's what you need in this league.
Chauncey Billups' 34 points helped Detroit gain a commanding 3-1 lead after their 109-99 win over Milwaukee. And Pistons coach Flip Saunders felt controlling the tempo was key.
Even in the fourth quarter, we scored 35 points, and we really didn't look to run much. We set it up. We ran our offense. We made them either come trap as far as in mismatches and got the ball swinging, made good plays, and took care of the ball tonight. That's always a big key because it turnovers fuel the other team's offense.
By the way, congratulations to Kobe Bryant and his lovely wife who gave birth to a baby girl on the Lakers' day off from the playoffs.
All right.
That's what I call cooperation.
Now, did I hear that Shaq's wife had a baby, too?
This is true.
Wow. Kobe and Shaq, they don't speak, but I guess they think
they're on the same cycle. Stanley Cup playoffs, Detroit was eliminated by Edmonton 4-3. Steve Yzerman disappointed the season ended without a title.
It's happened to us a couple of times where we've had very good regular seasons and had a lot of lofty goals for the playoffs, and that's disappointing. But once again, I said before the series, I'd get it coming into the playoffs. There's not a big difference between number one and number eight.
Anaheim forced the seventh and deciding game with a 2-1 victory over Calgary. Mark, who says you can't go home again? Who says that?
I don't know.
Well, several players did it yesterday in baseball. We'll explain next hour on the Air America Sports Scoreboard.
Well, you forgot something, but I'll forgive you for now.
All right, what was the soccer score?
Never mind, never mind, never mind.
I'm not going to do it next hour either. You might as well do it now.
All right, Arsenal 3, Sunderland 0.
Okay, congratulations.
Yes, thank you very much,
very
Larry
nice.
Hardesty. And make sure you correct that next hour.
Yes, sir.
And now, Air America Mornings is happy to serve up today's piping hot batch of Sunrise Sound Bites.
Here it is, 156 weeks later. With fighting and violence continuing across Iraq, we know that that declaration was woefully premature.
The formation of a new unity government that represents all Iraqis and all of Iraq's communities, that is an important development and really helps to lay the foundation for progress going forward.
The president feels very strongly and very passionately about the need to get an agreement, about the need to get a robust security force, a blue-hatted force in to be able to protect the innocent people of Darfur.
I worry, Mr. President, that translating our national anthem will actually have the effect of dividing us. It adds to the celebration of multiculturalism in our society, which has eroded our understanding of our American culture.
We're here to send the message that everybody in this country, whether you're documented or undocumented, all contributed to this country.
I'm going to be in an 8-foot diameter sphere aquarium filled to the top with water. So basically a ball filled with water made out of glass, and I'm going to be chained into that ball for 7 days and 7 nights, completely submerged underwater.
Those are today's Sunrise Soundbites on Air America Mornings.
And they include Senator Harry Reid, White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, Senator Lamar Alexander, who must be smoking something real powerful, a Chinese immigrant in New York City, and finally, magician David Blaine. Stay with us. We've got stories you're going to hear more about on the grapevine and a whole lot more. It's Air America Mornings, the Mark Riley Show. Thanks for being with us. 21 past the hour.
Call Mark Riley on Air America Mornings at 866-303-2270. Air America Mornings with Mark Riley.
26 minutes past the hour. Thank you all so much for joining us on this Tuesday, May the 2nd, 2006. Now, here's a couple stories you're going to hear more about on today's Grapevine. Now, I have been negligent, Chris Lopresto. We haven't talked about the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival yet, and you know we have an affiliate in that great city.
Of course.
Yeah, well, this past weekend, apparently, it was smoking down there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, man. Bob Dylan was down there. Springsteen was down there.
Really?
I mean, it's, yeah, man. I mean, the Jazz and Heritage Festival has taken off. Of course, it's against the backdrop of Hurricane Katrina. And, of course, that was something that a lot of people, a lot of the musicians down there talked about. It's coming up again this coming weekend. Paul Simon, a bunch of other folks are going to be performing. And we're going to be talking in just a bit. I'm getting this from Rolling Stone, by the way. We're going to be talking just a bit with Nathan Brackett, who, of course, is a senior editor at Rolling Stone, about that magazine's 1,000th issue. That's incredible. Anna Nicole Smith wins big at the Supreme Court. She's been given a new chance to get at that vast fortune of her late husband. She can pursue her claim to that estate in federal court. It was a reversal of a lower court ruling that the case belonged in Texas probate court. Stay with us. We're going to be going overseas live to Italy. We're going to be talking with Fabio Cermonte as well as Nathan Brackett. It's Air America Mornings, the Mark Riley Show. Thanks for being with us. 27 past.
Air America Mornings with Mark Riley. At airamericaradio.com/Mark Riley.
34 minutes past the hour. Thanks for being with us. It's Air America Mornings. And in the top of the news, I'm sure you know, millions take to the streets to stand up for the rights of immigrants. Iran goes off on the U.S., says President Bush, and others in the administration contemplate a nuclear strike. They want the United Nations to do something about it. Former top CIA spy says Bush could have had Zarqawi killed. He was tracked every day for a year. Joe Biden, senior senator on the Foreign Relations Committee, wants to partition Iraq into three regions. The FBI sought personal information on about 3,500 U.S. citizens and legal residents in the year 2005. Say goodbye to that $100 gas rebate. It does not look like it's happening. And the president of Bolivia, that is, seizes its gas industry, a very bold and very controversial move. And if that weren't enough, he sent soldiers to occupy the gas fields. And now, our conversation with Rolling Stone magazine senior editor Nathan Brackett. Rolling Stone magazine's 1,000th issue hits the stands this morning. 1,000 issues since it was first published back in 1967. How has the magazine evolved over time? Is it still relevant? We're joined in studio by Rolling Stone senior editor Nathan Brackett. Nathan, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure. I mean, I hope it's still relevant.
Oh, yeah. Sure, it's still relevant. It's changed a lot over the years, though, huh?
It has. It absolutely has. You know, it started out as, you know, on Jan Wenner, the editor's kitchen table. He had $3,000 just to start it up with. And it was a newspaper, you know, it was a local San Francisco rock magazine. Now it you know, has 1.2 million subscribers, and it's basically a pop culture magazine. But as you know, we also managed to fit in some politics.
Oh, yeah, you fit in some politics. And one of the things I find interesting is that it really did start out as one of the voices, probably one of the prime voices, of the 60s counterculture. Yet that counterculture has vanished before our very eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you could really have a magazine like that today. I mean, we could debate it. You know, it's interesting. But, I mean,
I'm not sure we could at all.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting thing about Rolling Stone, which a lot of people don't realize today, is that it's still one of the few independently owned mass media outlets. It's just the editor and his former wife, Jane Wenner. And basically, he doesn't have any shareholder pressure to do, you know, to do whatever they want to do. He can still, if he decides he wants to do a cover on the worst president ever, a.k.a. George W. Bush, he can do it, you know, which is still nice, you know.
Now, is it advertiser-driven or subscription-driven at this point?
It's advertiser-driven. I mean, any mass media magazine is advertiser-driven, but, you know, we do have a lot of subscribers, too, and we try to keep them happy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Nathan, how has Rolling Stone changed since you got there?
Well, you know, it was pretty much what it is now when I started. You know, it's basically, you know, it's a strong element of it. It is a pop culture magazine. You know, we feel a responsibility to cover what's going on in the culture, whether it's, you know, Britney Spears or whether it's Radiohead. Yeah. You know, obviously we care about rock music, and that's where we cover that in the review section of the magazine and the rock news section. But we also have a responsibility just to cover what's in the air, and that's what keeps it relevant.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, I got to say, as someone who read the early issues of Rolling Stone and have read it over the arc of its existence, you know, when you get to my age, sometimes people kind of look at the music scene and say, geez, you know, there's no good music.
Who are
anymore.
These people?
Who are these people? They're not interesting. I've heard this all before. I remember when so-and-so did the same riff in whatever year it was. How do you look at that part of the rock business? Is the music still as vital as it was during the early years of Rolling Stone?
Well, you know, the thing that I always tell people when they say music is different is that, you know, there's still tons of good music out there, but the scene is just a lot more fragmented. You have a harder time finding it.
You know, it's really out there. Look around.
Yeah, you know, it's not like in the 60s or 70s when, you know, one FM radio station was playing all the great music. You know, now it's like out there in individual sites. You got to go on, you know, file sharing services. You got to, you know, be reading, you know, smaller websites as well as Rolling Stone.
Absolutely. Now, the 1,000th issue, what's in it? What can people look forward to?
Well, for this, we picked our top 100 covers of all time. So you have everything from the first cover, you know, which has John Lennon, you know, when the magazine was still a newspaper, to, you know, Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day and Jay-Z, you know, from last year. And we talked to the photographers. We got behind-the-scenes stories. There's a lot of, you know, fascinating stories, you know, like when the Red Hot Chili Peppers were on the cover 10 years ago and one of their band members, John Frusciante, quit right as we were going to press. So we actually cut one of them off the cover.
Oh, wow.
So there's three members. They were pretty bitter about it, you know, but we interviewed them again and they've recovered.
Now, how, in your judgment, has the image of the rock star changed over time?
Well, you know, I think we're entering actually a good time in music where credibility is really the most important thing again. You know, rock is definitely a different phase. You could definitely make the argument that, you know, that hip-hop is much more relevant to, you know, your average 17-year-old. You know, but with rock fans, they're finding small bands. They're going out to live music a lot more in smaller clubs. They may not be breaking – rock bands may not be breaking through to MTV as much as they used to. And not, like, one rock band may not be, like, the voice of the culture, but you're finding still a lot of good music and you're seeing a lot of kind of really vital bands.
Now, tell us about maybe three vital bands in your estimation that you've heard over the last year or so.
Well, you know, Radiohead have a new album coming out, and they're always vital. You know, the Strokes are kind of entering an interesting phase where they can still, you know, sell out, you know, sell tickets for 12,000 people. They may not sell a lot of records, but they're still making really interesting music.
But back to the 1,000th issue. When you mark a period of time like Rolling Stone is doing with this. You're talking about now,
It's going to be 39 years.
39 years, almost 40 years. of publishing. How has the political coverage changed? I mean, back in the early days, you had Hunter Thompson. You had a kind of irreverent style to political coverage. Has that changed?
Well, yeah, the political coverage has changed with the magazine. I mean, you definitely had Hunter S. Thompson in the 70s. In the 80s, you had P.J. O'Rourke, you know, who was a conservative.
Lost his mind.
Yeah, he kind of lost his mind. And he was certainly, you know, that threw a lot of people for a loop because he's obviously got a right-wing bent, you know. But he brought his own energy to the magazine. A lot of people loved him. Recently, you could say that we've gone through a real political revival. I think the 2004 elections really kind of recharged the magazine's political batteries. You know, we had a run there before November 2004 where we put Michael Moore on the cover, followed by John Kerry, followed by a cover, you know, devoted to the Vote for Change concerts that Bruce Springsteen was doing. So that really kind of got us going again. And recently, we've been doing almost something major every issue, some big feature, something like that.
Now, enlighten us, which is the biggest-selling single Rolling Stone cover?
The biggest-selling single Rolling Stone cover is the one after Elvis died.
Really?
Yeah, it's
like
kind of 1977. It has a, you know, very simple picture of Elvis when he was young. And I think, you know, it had an 80% sell-through rate, which is kind of unheard of, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Nathan Brackett, as always, great to talk with you, man. Thanks a lot for being with us on The Mark Reilly Show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Nathan Brackett, and of course, 42 minutes past the hour, the Rolling Stone will be out on newsstands tomorrow. Now, Chris Lopresto, Elvis wasn't your favorite cover. Of course, you were barely born when the Elvis cover came out, right?
Yeah, I was not born.
You were not born yet. Yeah, well, what was your favorite cover?
I will always remember the Jennifer Aniston cover with her showing her butt in the background.
Ah!
That's always a good one. And Kermit, you had a good one.
Uh-oh.
There was one with Janet Jackson that I was
Janet Jackson. Someone else was holding her boobs.
Boobs, you say?
Yes, boobs. I said boobs.
All right, you can say boobs. I guess you can get – well, you know what you can say and what you can't
that
say.
That is true.
But
Larry, how about you? Do you have a favorite
You like those titillating photographs.
Oh, nice pun.
Oh, my goodness.
Halle Berry.
Halle Berry. She was on the cover of Rolling Stone?
No, but if she was.
Oh, okay. I was just checking. I didn't see Halle Berry on the cover of Rolling Stone.
By the way.
My God.
Destiny's Child, they had a good cover.
Destiny's Child?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, I was never that big a fan of Destiny's Child. I'll be
really?
Nah, I mean, Beyonce is okay. I like Crazy in Love. That's a great song. But actually, it was a great hook. They weren't. I never thought they were great singers. I'm sorry. But, you know, if I guess they got their – you know, there was – who did that song, Get Your Picture on the Cover of the Rolling Stone? Some group from one of those hippie bands from back in the day. Yeah, I know. I should know this, too, as old as I am. But at one time, getting your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone was a big deal. It meant if you were a new artist, it really meant that you had arrived at a point, that you were somebody.
Yeah, in Almost Famous, the movie, they celebrated the fact that they were going to get the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Of the Rolling Stone, that's right. Wow. Well, you know, the magazines, I remember Rolling Stone way, way back in the day when it was really like this counterculture underground. There were a bunch of different magazines and newspapers across the country at that time that were all considered counterculture. You know, used to talk about, you know, how to make sure you don't get a bad trip if you drop acid, all that kind of late 60s sort of stuff. And Rolling Stone has survived. It's amazing that Rolling Stone, by concentrating, I think, maybe 50% on music, and then, of course, dealing with politics, dealing with American culture, which Lamar Alexander says we're in danger of losing by the Spanish national anthem. Don't let me go off about that now. I don't have time. But, boy, let me say, in the 6 o'clock hour, Chris, we're going to have to play that again because I couldn't believe that I heard what I heard when I heard this man. He's a senator, for God's sake, from a state in America. Here we go. Dr. Hook. That's it. Dr. Hook. Stay with us. We're going to Italy. Fabio Cermonte's next. Right after Dr. Hook. It's Mark Reilly on Air America Mornings.
Very, very good idea.
News, talk, and best of all, progressive Air America Mornings with Mark Reilly. Oh. overseas live on Air America Mornings.
49 minutes past the hour. Thanks for being here. It's the Mark Reilly Show, and every morning we take you live overseas to get the latest breaking news from across the globe. This morning we're on the ground in Rome with Fabio Cermonte. He is a correspondent with Britain's ITV television. Fabio, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being with us. Now, Fabio, there are funerals going on in Italy for some soldiers, three soldiers, I believe, who were killed in Iraq. Is Iraq still on the conscience, the collective consciousness of the Italian people?
I mean, it was actually taken off the news during the election campaign, because Berlusconi had made a huge effort on concentrating on the economics and the threat from the other side taking over. But of course, this blow in Nasiriya has brought back the Iraqi question at the center of the political discussion and to the heart of the Italian public.
Now, Fabio, what has the incoming Prime Minister, Romano Prodi, what has he said about Iraq? What position will his government take?
Of course, I mean, today at the funeral, Berlusconi and Prodi were sitting almost next to each other. So it's, in this moment, the whole country unite behind the victims. But the positions are very different. Prodi promised that the troops will be withdrawn as soon as technically possible from Iraq. What that means exactly is not clear, but part of the coalition, they're saying that the troops should be thrown back before summer.
Uh-huh, all of them.
All of them before summer. That was stated yesterday by a prominent member of the coalition. Prodi is still sticking on the technically viable, and that is, there leaves more margin.
Mm-hmm. Now, Fabio, will there be any talks between this new government and the U.S. prior to that pullout that you just mentioned that would happen by the end of summer?
There were agreements before, but this is Berlusconi. But at the moment, we are in a vacuum, and we're not sure exactly when Prodi will actually be given the mandate to form a government, because Italian politics is very complicated, and we have another complication now with the fact that the state president, who's supposed to appoint Prodi, it's going to be vacant next week.
Uh-huh. Now, what does that mean? There won't be anyone to appoint him?
That means that they have to quickly elect a new state president, but the position till now of Berlusconi has been of delaying tactics. So we don't know how quick that election could be. If Berlusconi drags his feet, that can take time, and that can keep on the vacuum. And with the situation in Iraq, that's going to be very dangerous.
Now, Fabio, does Berlusconi gain any political advantage by stalling like this? He can't recover his position. Why would he continue to do this?
That's not very clear, actually. A little bit can come from his personality. He just doesn't accept the defeat, and that can be one reason for this. Or there could be other maneuvering behind the closed doors that we are not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Now it seems then that Prodi's position has really not all been completely solidified, even though Berlusconi seems to have dropped his public opposition or public contesting of the prime minister's race, huh?
Sorry, there was a bit of a noise. Now, can you repeat the question,
please? Oh, yeah. I'm saying Prodi's position really has not been solidified, despite Berlusconi saying essentially that he will not contest the actual result of the election, right?
Yes. Berlusconi, Prodi is the winner. There is no doubt about it. I mean, the numbers are there. And he is entitled, and he has the duty to govern. So, I mean, all this delaying tactics just taking time, creating a lot of confusion. The public is very confused because, they have a result of an election, and they don't have a new government, and they don't know for how long that is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Final, very quick question: what is he going to do first? Do you think? Obviously, the economy was a very big issue in Italy. What's going to be his first move once he does solidify power?
Do you mean the first political act of Prodi?
Prodi, yeah.
Yes, I think the first act will be what we're facing now. We have the so-called devolution.
Mm-hmm.
That has been so controversial. You know, that was pushed actually by the Northern League. There's a kind of separatist movement in the north of Italy. That will be tackled as soon as possible, because that was at the center of that can completely change the political landscape.
Uh-huh.
And Prodi has promised to tackle that as soon as possible.
Fabio Sarmante, it's always great to talk with you, man. Thanks a lot for being with us.
You're most welcome.
Fabio Sarmante from ITV News. We know that many of you early risers may have missed out on some of the happenings from evening television, so here's your chance to catch up on what was on the tube last night.
The walkout, known as El Gran Paro, which means, I don't know. I would have translated that for you if anyone who speaks Spanish had actually come into the office today.
According to a new poll, Condoleezza Rice, Secretary of State, is the most popular member of the Bush administration. Most popular member of the Bush administration. Yeah. That's like being MVP of the Knicks. Thank you very much. And
the New Orleans Saints drafted Reggie Bush this past weekend. Yeah, people in New Orleans are hoping maybe this Bush will actually do something to help the city, so they're excited about that.
Today's been a complete mess. First, my housekeeper, Consuela, didn't show up for work. Okay, fine. I can roll with that. But neither did Jorge, my gardener, Luis, my driver, or Miguel, the guy who stands in my parking space until I get there. Maybe there's some sort of bug going around. I hope not, because I don't provide health care for these people.
All right, that was The Daily Show's Jon Stewart. And he was wishing people at his office who spoke Spanish were around to help him translate the Spanish name of yesterday's immigration rallies. David Letterman, putting Condoleezza Rice's popularity into perspective. Jay Leno, that is, on the New Orleans Saints' hope that Reggie Bush will do what President Bush has not done. And finally, Stephen Colbert expressing a little bit of concern for his immigrant workers that didn't show up for work yesterday. Stay with us. We've got the top news stories. We've got Larry with all the sports. And later on in the hour, we're going to introduce you to one of those 18 grannies who staged a very unique protest at the Times Square Recruitment Center. That's the military recruitment center right here in New York City. It's Air America Mornings. I'm Mark Riley. Thanks for being with us. 57 past.
Air America Mornings with Mark Riley. Radio's only progressive morning news magazine.
It's 6 minutes past the hour. Good morning, people. It's Air America Mornings, the Mark Riley Show. It's Tuesday, May 2nd, 2006. And across America yesterday, millions took to the streets. Took to the streets to stand up for immigrant rights. Not just Latino immigrants, Polish immigrants, Irish immigrants, African immigrants, Chinese immigrants, people from all over the world came together on the streets of America to demand proper treatment for immigrants and proper treatment out of any immigrant reform bill that might come through Congress. Now, what scares me about immigrant rights bills coming or immigrant reform bills coming through Congress is what I heard a little bit earlier in our Sunrise soundbites. This is Tennessee Senator Lamar Alexander. Now, I think that Ron Dada correctly points out that I think he was at one time like the education secretary or something. I'm not sure exactly what his CV is. But no, Ron, he's not black. Okay.
Just because his name
is Lamar, you thought he was African American, all right? But no. No, his name is not is indicative of who he is. In this instance, he's a white guy, okay, as far as I know. But I mean, this thing that he came up with, and I guess he was talking to Bush. I don't know who he was talking to. But, Chris, play this for me. I want to get Wayne Gilman's opinion on this, because Wayne is a man of some stature in the community.
Thank you.
Whatever. But let's hear Lamar Alexander.
I worry, Mr. President, that translating our national anthem will actually have the effect of dividing us. It adds to the celebration of multiculturalism in our society, which has eroded our understanding of our American culture.
Now, how does he know that? How does somebody say that multiculturalism has eroded our understanding of American culture? See, as a black person, I'm insulted by this.
Right? Celebration of multiculturalism? That sounds like a positive, right?
Well, it would sound like a positive.
This is
the
Republican line.
I know that.
He's just parroting what Bush said a week ago.
Yeah, but it's insane.
It is insane. It was insane for Bush to even make
this
statement.
This country is based on multiculturalism.
Exactly.
We celebrate. That he was right on board with saying we celebrate multiculturalism. That's what we do.
Yeah, but he's made multiculturalism into a four-letter word. I like the term diversity. I like the term, you know, God help me, integration, but not integration in the traditional sense. Just, you know, people all being in the same physical space at the same point in time. We're all in here together, whether we migrated here recently or whether we migrated here in chains or whether we migrated here because we didn't like the air in England. I don't know. I mean, at a point, there is something to be said for the fact that this country welcomed immigrants
exactly. When
they came from a certain part of the world. And now that they no longer come from that certain part of the world, there seems to be a problem.
A long-held tradition. I think the Republican Party, I think they're divided. I mean, I was amazed to read earlier this morning that our former New York City mayor, who's looking to become president one day, whether he admits it or not, Rudolph Giuliani, is saying that the party has to shift to more divergent views. Now, anyone who knows the history of Rudolph Giuliani, particularly in this town.
He had no tolerance for divergent views.
Thank you. You know, so I'm amazed. And I can't wait for the campaign to start so the Reverend Al Sharpton can get in his face.
Well, you know what divergent views for him is? Hosting a fundraiser for Ralph freaking Reed.
And Rick Santorum.
Yeah, Rick Santorum.
Exactly.
So I guess when it comes to finding common ground, he's finding common ground with the right-wing Yahoo part
exactly.
of the Republican
That's
Party.
Right. I didn't examine it that closely.
No, believe me, he ain't talking about finding common cause with no black folks.
Well, I found it interesting.
We're celebrating multiculturalism right here in this studio.
We try our best.
All the black guys are on one side, the white guys are on the other. What are you talking
We've
about?
We've got Larry over here somewhere.
The whites are in control again.
Oh, you got the token, huh? No, kidding. Only kidding. He's got a sports report to do, I hope.
Yeah, I'll do it. I have it right here.
Oh, okay.
Yanks lost.
No, don't start. Don't start. We have someone to do that around here. Just to hear somebody say that, you know, Mr. President, I believe. What are you, crazy? And all of this over a Spanish translation of an English drinking song.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, will you give me a break? That's crazy. What scares me. This is a guy who's going to decide immigration policy for this country.
Right. Crazy talk.
Yeah, well, crazy talk from a guy with power. This guy is one of 100 people who will decide the future of millions of people in this country, okay? Mm-hmm. This is not just about some, intangible, pie in the sky kind of thing. This is something that has a direct impact. And when I hear him talk this, this is the same logic they use, people who oppose same-sex marriage or any kind of gay rights. They say the same thing. Well, we're eroding traditional American. But says who? Says who? Why would anyone believe in their heart of hearts, if anyone who has read American history or even taken a history class in this country, why would you say that you're eroding traditional American values? That's whack. That's absolutely insane, absolutely absurd. And as black people, I think we are uniquely positioned to see the dark underside, if you would, of America's traditions.
Got that right.
It's okay. Because if you want to start talking about lynching and racial oppression, and that too is part of America's cultural background.
Exactly. It's really, unsettling to think that in our time, that was still going on.
Yeah, it was still going on. Yeah, as a matter of fact,
Texas, it's still going on.
It's still going on.
Yeah,
you're right.
Still going
Thanks,
on.
Ron.
But now, Wayne Gilman, take a wild guess. When did the Star-Spangled Banner become America's national anthem?
Wow. As long as I can remember. I mean, I'm
80 years old, but.
Listen, Mr. Ollie, don't tell us.
Well, you said as long as you can remember.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm just going based on a guess, but I mean, it's long before, I'd say before the turn of the century, going back to the time, what was it, George Washington's,
George Washington?
No.
You want to go back to the late 1700s?
Wait, are we talking 1700s or 1800s?
I would say maybe the 1800s.
1800s. Well, 1800s? Wrong answer.
Okay, 1770. No. What is it?
Wrong again.
Okay.
1931.
Really?
1931 was the year the Star Spangled Banner. Now, it was written, actually, the original melody was an English drinking song from the late 18th century. Francis Scott Key wrote the lyrics, I believe, in 1814.
Yeah, but I mean, wasn't it regarded even back then as the, the national? Well, you don't have to press that.
No, it wasn't. In fact, it was just the Star Spangled Banner.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I mean, for people to talk about our tradition, remember that 1 year after the Star Spangled Banner became America's national anthem, they railroaded a bunch of black guys known as the Scottsboro Boys. It almost killed them.
Yeah, exactly.
All right? That was the year after they made the Star Spangled Banner the American national anthem.
Well, we weren't all that united then.
Well, what are you talking about?
We're not so united now.
I know. We're not so united now either. But, I mean, this is part of what I believe to be the hypocrisy of people like Lamar Alexander sit up and talk about all these traditions. And, Pat Buchanan, who's lost his freaking mind.
Yeah.
We've been invaded. You've been invaded? What, are you out of your mind? Mm-hmm. When did your people invade? Okay. If anybody's got justification for saying we've been invaded, it's the Indians in this country.
Well, I'm surprised his sister took a similar stance, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Who? Babe?
Babe, yeah.
Well, of course she's going to say, why?
No, but I mean, usually they are, they spar a great deal.
Well, they spar a little bit, but trust me, they're on the same page. They're related.
Yeah. Riley, you hit it on the head yesterday. You said something about other cultures, other languages, other cultures writing, translate it into their language as well. I think that's what people ought to do. I think it ought to be translated into many languages and see what
into
old Lamar
many
thinks.
Many languages. Mm. And if they translate it into 180 different languages, it will still not be a better song because it's not a great piece of music. I'm sorry, it's not.
Spanish version was a heck of a lot better than the English version. With the rappers, chiming in and a little bit of this, little Ponce, coming in.
Yeah, and I think Wyclef Jean is on there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. And I understand that, some people get made paranoid by anything that's not of their own culture. But you know what? The way you make social progress in this country is by mixing cultures, mixing economic
celebrating
status. Mixing, yeah, absolutely. And it's not just multiculturalism. It is mixing people of various economic strata as well.
Well, that's good to hear from your lips.
We got good to hear from my lips.
This is certainly an about face for you. I mean,
no,
30 years I've known you.
I've always been involved.
Really? Is that right?
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Economic status.
Absolutely.
I mean, race is one
Remember,
thing,
I was poor.
Okay. Was. Thank you. The operative word was.
Stop it.
Excuse me.
Here, give up your seat to the other black man in the room.
I know. The Yanks lost last night, Larry Hardesty.
Huh?
The Yankees lost last night.
Yeah. Okay. He wants to do the sports
game. No, it just really disturbed me.
Disturbed you?
Yeah.
Why? Is he a resident of the Bronx or something?
Exactly.
All right. We ain't got all day, all right? We got a question.
All right.
No, I'm sorry. Chris, am I moving him along too quickly?
No, that's fine. You're doing a very good job.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
They're changing seats here.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for sharing.
Uh-oh.
Come back when you don't have to stay so long.
Oh, gosh.
You don't have to leave, man. Come on, sit down. Larry Hardesty is standing by, and as I'm sure you all know by now, the Yankees lost. How you doing, Larry?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Deportes Papis. In the NBA, the Los Angeles Clippers eliminated Denver with a 101-83 win over Denver. Dallas completed a four-game sweep of Memphis, 102-76, and Detroit has a commanding 3-1 lead after their 109-99 win over Milwaukee. In the Stanley Cup playoffs, Detroit was eliminated by Edmonton 4-3, and Anaheim forced the seventh and deciding game with a 2-1 victory over Calgary. Let's talk baseball. Houston has requested a meeting with Roger Clemens' agent this week to discuss a new deal that would bring the 7-time Cy Young Award winner back to the Astros. Remember, Boston, Texas, and the Yankees are also interested in signing Roger.
Mm-hmm.
On the field, all eyes were on Fenway Park for Johnny Damon's return as a member of the Yankees. Some booed, others cheered as Boston beat New York 7-3. Here's Damon, who went 0-for-4 in the crowd's response.
I thought the reception was great. Something I was going to do regardless if there were a mix of cheers and boos, because the ones cheering, I know appreciated what we accomplished as a team here.
And that would be tipping his cap, Mark. Ah. I saw that look in your eye. He didn't do anything rude. He just tipped his cap to those who applauded. By the way, several fans thought he needed some extra money, so they threw money at him when he got to the outfield.
Paper money?
Paper money and coins.
Coins, okay.
Jim Thome also returned home. He returned to Jacobs Field for the first time since 2002. He drove in a run, scored another, and received mixed reaction from the crowd as Chicago won 8-6.
I really didn't think about it. Okay, are they going to cheer or are they going to boo? I mean, I knew there would probably be a little bit of both because when I went to Winter Haven, when I signed with Philly, it happened the same way there. So it really wasn't anything that was out of the ordinary from what I got when I went to Winter Haven.
Other American League winners include Oakland, Seattle, Texas, Toronto, and Detroit. In the National League, Tim Hudson fired a one-hitter, collected an RBI single as Atlanta shut out Colorado. Tuesday.
It feels good to just go out there and give us a good chance to win and get this thing going in the right direction. We have some ground to make up with the Mets, and this would be something to build from.
Speaking of the Mets, they are an impressive 17-8 following a 2-1 victory over Washington. Other winners include Philadelphia, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, Chicago, Arizona, and San Diego. And yes, Sunderland goes down to Arsenal. Arsenal wins 3-0. Thank God there was a score. Otherwise, we'd be having that nil-nil discussion again.
No nil-nil.
Aggregates and, false goalies and, all this other stuff.
False goalies? What is a false goalie?
A goalie who we thought let a goal in, like his own goal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one of those guys. A false goalie.
Oh, a false goalie. Yes. You got to be careful for them.
Absolutely. And now, tomorrow.
Yes.
I'm sorry, one second. Riley, are you concerned at all about Arsenal's injury?
Abu Dhabi. Yeah, I am. I'm very concerned. Hopefully, Philippe Senderos will be okay. I think he may be out for the Champions League, too, though. This is the Champions League final comes up May 17th.
Yes.
This is the Super Bowl of European soccer, y'all. And guess who's in it?
Arsenal.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much. They are the greatest team in football.
They're better than Brazil?
Huh?
They're better than Brazil?
Well, that's different. That's a national team.
No, it's football.
Team. We got a Brazilian on Arsenal.
Okay.
Gilberto.
Okay. That's one way to merge, to make sure
you get
everything
well. Yeah, make sure you get,
Arsenal's
like a UN, man.
Okay.
Arsenal's got people from Togo and from all over the world.
My seat is moving because Ron Dodd's hitting the ejector seat. You better go to
the question. Oh, okay. Yes. We're going to the question. Thank you very much, Larry Hardesty, for the Air America Morning Sports Report. And before we get beat up in here, let's ask you a real simple question because I beat my head against the wall. So did Ron, actually.
Wait,
He's got the bruises to show it.
Do you think we have time for a question this time around?
Sure. Don't we?
I don't know.
We got time. Chris says we got time. All right. What do you think yesterday's rallies and boycott for immigrant rights accomplished? That's a very simple question. Hopefully we'll get some really great answers. 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270. 20 past the hour. We'll be right back.
What are you waiting for? We're listening to you. Call us now at 866-303-2270 and get involved in the conversation. That's 866-303-2270. Air America Mornings. On Air America Mornings at 866-303-2270.
25 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270 is the number. The question, what do you think yesterday's rallies and boycott for immigrant rights accomplished? What did it do? Did it raise people's awareness of the immigrant problem? Did it give people license to go out in the street and protest? Because there were a couple of counter-protests, apparently, in some parts of the United States. But all in all, several million people across America took to the streets. Cities and towns across this great land of ours were affected by this. In the meantime, a host of other issues that folk are dealing with and folk will be dealing with in the near future. First of all, forget about that $100 rebate, that gas rebate that the senators, Republican senators, were going to give you. off the table, it looks like now. Senate Republicans dropped their cut-and-paste answer to high gas prices after business objections to a tax provision in that same legislation. The rebate didn't exactly set the world on fire either. Senators didn't really think a great deal before they tried to draft that bill. And unfortunately, the $100 rebate would have been paid for in large measure by that same tax provision that they took out at the behest of big business.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, so the oil companies aren't even giving us the $100 back?
No, the oil companies aren't giving you $100.
So we're paying the $100. We were going to be paying $100.
You were going to be paying $100. Oh. That's absolutely true, Chris Lopresto. And that $100 you will now pay because the Senate, I mean, this was just an idea of theirs at this point. This was something they were trying to float. They knew this is an election year, man. They got to come up with something, don't they? Don't they? Well, I guess they don't. I don't know. I mean, at this point, you're talking about a body, both the Senate and the House. They're scared to death. They're scared that George W. Bush has dragged them into the muck and mire, and they are afraid. They're seeing these opinion polls that are saying 50-55% of the people that are being surveyed will vote Democratic in this year's November elections, and they're getting very nervous. If they got GOP, if they got the elephant as their symbol on their lapels, they are the ones that could bear the brunt. So they're trying to come up with something. The gas rebate thing might have been a good idea. People like money, but apparently folks saw through it and saw through it in pretty short order. Stay with us, won't you? We've got Jim Hightower coming up, and we're going to talk to one of the 18 grannies who got busted here in New York City opposing the war in Iraq. It's Air America Mornings, the Mark Riley Show, 27 past the hour.
Air America Mornings, radio's only progressive morning news magazine with Mark Riley.
Good morning, 34 minutes past the hour, and right now it's time for America's number one populist. Here's today's commentary from Jim Hightower.
Question, what does the name Google translate to in Chinese? Answer, weasel. This internet giant grew up with a free spirit attitude and the ethical slogan of do no evil. But today, it has sold out those values and become just another money-grubbing outfit, as proven by its craven effort to weasel into the Chinese market. To get in, Google is paying a price in human freedom and its own integrity. It has agreed to collaborate with China's repressive rulers to censor that country's internet users and to help the government silence dissidents. Google will block access, for example, to any pesky internet sites that deal with such taboo topics as democracy or Tiananmen Square, which the Chinese propaganda minister considers sensitive. Chief Googleite Eric Schmidt says that the corporation simply must follow China's repressive censorship laws, calling it a principled decision. Speaking recently in China, Schmidt grandly declared that, "I think it's arrogant for us to walk into a country where we are just beginning operations and tell that country how to run itself." Yeah, Eric, the U.S. corporations that did business with Hitler couldn't have said it better. Schmidt admits that Google did not even suggest that the Chinese regime loosen up a bit on censorship and that it had no intention to do so. "We had a choice to enter the country and follow the law," says Schmidt, "or we had a choice not to enter the country." No, Eric, you had an obvious ethical choice to do no evil, to tell China's rulers that Google would provide an essential service that they know they must offer to their people, but that you would only provide it if the rulers loosen their repressive restrictions and allow the free flow of ideas. This is Jim Hightower saying, to tell Google bosses to stand for their own espoused values and to stop their money-grubbing weaseling, call them. 650-253-0000.
36 minutes past the hour, and that, of course, was Jim Hightower. You can hear his commentary each and every day here on The Mark Riley Show. And now our conversation with one of the 18 grannies who got busted and then acquitted right here in New York City protesting the war in Iraq, Joan Weil, and civil rights attorney Norman Siegel.
I was sitting around watching soaps, just a useless old sad sack. But then I heard those Republican dopes saying we had to bomb Iraq.
You gotta be kidding.
Well, I jumped up right out of my seat.
got my banners and peace signs out.
Here we go again.
Then I hurried down to the street and started to yell and shout.
Shout what?
Grandmas, get off of your tush. We've got to go after Bush. Let's torment that lying jerk.
She was not only turned down, but arrested and jailed on October 17th when she and 18 other women ages 59 to 91 who call themselves Grandmothers Against the War tried to enlist in the service at the Times Square recruiting station here in New York City. When denied entrance, the grannies were charged with disorderly conduct for sitting down in front of the door. They made headlines again recently when they were acquitted with the help of their attorney, Norman Siegel, the former head of the New York Civil Liberties Union. We are delighted to welcome the head granny, Joan Weil, founder of Grandmothers Against the War, and civil rights attorney Norman Siegel to the studio. Thanks for being with us, both of you.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Good morning, Mark. Thank
good morning.
For having us.
Now, Joan Weil, how did this protest come about? What was it that made you decide to focus on that specific recruiting station and take the particular action you did?
We were inspired by an action taken by the Tucson Raging Grannies in July 2005. They tried to enlist at a recruiting center in Tucson. They were briefly arrested, but the charges were dropped immediately. But they got a lot of attention. So we thought it would be a good idea to do it here in New York, in the media capital of the world, in the center of it all, Times Square. We thought we might get some mileage out of that in terms of notice in the press and media.
Did you expect to be arrested? Was that part of what you were looking to accomplish?
No, we were trying to enlist. We had cookies to give to the recruiters. Our primary goal was to enlist as a symbolic act of opposition to the war.
Mm-hmm. Now, Norman Siegel, certainly you've been through the wars as far as the New York City Police Department is concerned, some of their excesses. We've read reports that the grannies were handcuffed, held in for about 4.5 hours. Was this excessive as far as you were concerned, the reaction to their protest?
Actually, no. To their credit, the police department handled the situation, put aside whether there should have been an arrest. They were very courteous. The grandmothers were cooperating. They didn't want to get charged with resisting arrest. Would have increased the potential for the penalty here. And when you get a desk appearance ticket, which is what they got, they have to check all the records up in Albany, and that usually takes around 3-4 hours. So I don't think there was anything to be critical of the police department other than the arrest itself.
The arrest itself.
Because there should have been an arrest.
I have to interject here. The police were really wonderful and sweet and darling.
Wonderful, sweet, and darling. Now, to you, okay.
Yes.
Now, when they check you, they're looking for any outstanding warrants, that sort of thing. Is that what they're?
Absolutely. What they do is find out whether or not you've got any outstanding warrants or anything of that nature. And of course, every granny came up absolutely clean.
Absolutely clean, I can imagine. Now, I have to ask, because I do know that there have been a couple of instances where older Americans have, in fact, people who have particular specialties that the service wants and who have served before, some of them have gone back. I believe I read a story about one individual who's like 70-some-odd years old who was a specialist, I think a doctor or something, who actually did end up going, re-enlisting in the service. Did it ever dawn on you that maybe they might take you seriously?
I wasn't sure. Some of the grandmothers were, you know, really prepared to go into the service. We didn't think we'd be put into battle, but maybe it would have been a good idea because our own young military locked the doors on us and hid behind their desks. They were so scared of us. So I think if they had sent us to Iraq, we might have scared the insurgents.
If I can add, I was there, and two of the grannies came over to me just before they began to do their protest and said to me, Norman, what happens if they take us? And I looked at them and half seriously and half joking said, they'll send you off to Iraq.
And then they got sort of nervous for the moment. And then I said, but that's okay. I'll file a habeas corpus and I'll get you out.
Did you have any doubt, Norman Siegel, that the Grannies would be acquitted when they went to court on this?
Oh, sure. I think that we were swimming upstream because to begin with, the DA seemed to be very zealous about this prosecution. I still don't understand why.
It's the Manhattan DA's office.
Right.
Joan Wild, this past weekend there were 350,000, by some estimates, people massed in lower Manhattan right here in New York protesting the war. I guess that must have brought a little bit of smile of satisfaction to your face, huh?
Oh, yes, and we were right up front, we grannies. Some of us were in wheelchairs, and we got a lot of applause from the crowds and a lot of acknowledgement, and it thrilled us. And it was great to see that kind of outpouring, yes.
Now, between these two actions, when you're in the middle of a protest like that, do you get the feeling that maybe, just maybe, someone will hear your voices and maybe this protest will perhaps shorten the war by a day or two or a week or a month?
Oh, yes, I have to feel that way. Otherwise, why would I put myself through all that discomfort? And I know that we did inspire other actions because shortly after that, I got a call from a woman in Oakland, California, who had just organized a group of grandmothers against the war. And she started a Valentine's Day action all over the country. And 15 groups of grandmothers across the country, East Coast, West Coast, South, North, went to recruiting stations on that day and tried to enlist.
Really?
Yes.
That's fantastic. So yes, it really is triggering other similar type actions, just like the people in Arizona triggered yours.
Oh, yes.
A chain reaction. Is this your last protest?
No, it isn't. No. We have plans afoot for further actions, which I haven't formally worked out yet, but no, the grannies are still out there, and my parting words are, listen to your granny. She knows best.
All right. Joan Wild, Norman Siegel, thank you both so much for being with us on the Mark Riley Show this morning.
Thank you. Very great pleasure.
Grandmas, get off of your fannies. We need more fighting grannies. Let's show them our great, great power. Make those evil monsters cower. Grandmas, let's unite while we are still up.
All right, 45 minutes past the hour. A lot of fun talking to Joan Wild and Norman Siegel. We know many of you early risers may have missed out on some of the happenings from evening television, so here's your chance to catch up with what was on the tube last night.
The walkout, known as El Gran Paro, which means, I don't know. I would have translated that for you if anyone who speaks Spanish had actually come into the office today.
According to a new poll, Condoleezza Rice, Secretary of State, is the most popular member of the Bush administration. Most popular member of the Bush administration. Yeah. That's like being MVP of the Knicks. Thank you very much.
And the New Orleans Saints drafted Reggie Bush this past weekend. Yeah. People in New Orleans are hoping maybe this Bush will actually do something to help the city, so they're excited about that.
Today's been a complete mess. First, my housekeeper, Consuela, didn't show up for work. Okay, fine. I can roll with that. But neither did Jorge, my gardener, Luis, my driver, or Miguel, the guy who stands in my parking space until I get there. Maybe there's some sort of bug going around. I hope not, because I don't provide health care for these people.
All right, that was the Daily Show's Jon Stewart wishing the people at his office who spoke Spanish were around to help him translate the Spanish name of yesterday's immigration rallies. David Letterman putting Condoleezza Rice's popularity into its proper perspective. Jay Leno on the New Orleans Saints hope that Reggie Bush will do what President Bush hasn't. And finally, Stephen Colbert expressing just a bit of concern for his immigrant workers who didn't show up for work yesterday. Stay with us. We've got headlines. We've got Rachel Maddow coming with highlights from the Rachel Maddow Show and a whole lot more, including Sunrise Soundbites. It's the Mark Riley Show, part of Air America Mornings. Thanks for being with us, 47 past.
Air America Mornings with Mark Riley, 866-303-2270. Air America Mornings, radio's only progressive morning news magazine.
Hey, this is Rachel Maddow. Coming up next hour on Air America Mornings, we wish Amtrak a happy birthday with a celebratory tale of how to make your fellow train commuters think that the Canadian Prime Minister eats babies. Trust me, there is a connection. We'll get a behind-the-scenes look at yesterday's historic immigration protests. We follow up on the story of those two Australian miners trapped underground for the past week. They've requested that they be sent bacon and eggs. Plus, as military families keep getting screwed over by this administration, we do find one thing that the Republicans in Congress actually want to do for U.S. vets. It involves a national park, wheelchairs, and some elk. All that, plus a live in-studio performance by Josh Ritter. He's been called possibly the best songwriter working in America today. It's all coming up on Air America Morning, so stay tuned.
Thank you very much, Rachel Maddow. 52 minutes past the hour. Good morning. You know, there is a flip side of this immigration debate that a lot of people don't end up talking about, specifically violence that is perpetrated against people who are perceived to be either legal or illegal immigrants. A Latino boy who authorities said was viciously attacked and sodomized by two teens shouting ethnic slurs also suffered cigarette burns on his back and numerous other injuries. This young man is in critical condition, and the two young men who have been arrested, who have been charged with aggravated sexual assault, according to authorities, say they have acknowledged their roles in this attack, which took place on April 23rd. And apparently, as we said, the victim remains in critical condition. Hospital authorities are saying that it's good he's made it this far, and hopefully he will, in fact, pull through. These attackers stomped on this boy's head with steel-toed boots, poured bleach into a patio umbrella pole, sodomized him with it, tried to carve something in his chest, and then doused his body with bleach. That's the flip side of the immigration debate that sometimes we go, oh, get rid of all of them. Hey, sometimes our rhetoric can cause people to resort to violence, and I think it's something that we really cannot ignore. You know, Rachel mentioned those two miners who were trapped in Australia. They have been asking for bacon and eggs. Actually, those two miners finally got contacted by rescuers. They made radio contact, and their words, three simple ones, get us out. This is happening in the southern Australian state of Tasmania. Officials say, however, it could be another 48 hours, two more whole days, before emergency crews are actually able to rescue those trapped men. A third miner who was trapped along with them died in the initial collapse. His body was, in fact, retrieved last week. So there's good news coming out of Australia. Hopefully those miners will get out and get out alive and okay.
And now, Air America Mornings is happy to serve up today's piping hot batch of Sunrise Soundbites.
Here it is, 156 weeks later. With fighting and violence continuing across Iraq, we know that that declaration was woefully premature.
The formation of a new unity government that represents all Iraqis and all of Iraq's communities, that is an important development and really helps to lay the foundation for progress going forward.
The president feels very strongly and very passionately about the need to get an agreement, about the need to get a robust security force, a blue-hatted force in to be able to protect the innocent people of Darfur.
I worry, Mr. President, that translating our national anthem will actually have the effect of dividing us.
It adds to the celebration of multiculturalism in our society, which has eroded our understanding of our American culture.
We're here to send the message that everybody in this country, whether you're documented or undocumented, all contributed to this country.
I'm going to be in an 8-foot diameter sphere aquarium filled to the top with water. So basically a ball filled with water made out of glass, and I'm going to be chained into that ball for 7 days and 7 nights, completely submerged underwater.
Those are today's Sunrise Sound Bites on Air America Mornings.
And they include Senator Harry Reid on President Bush's 3-year-old declaration that military operations in Iraq were over. Outgoing White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan on the positive steps taken by the new Iraqi government. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on the president's commitment to getting an international force into the Sudan. Senator Lamar Alexander warning of the dangerous consequences posed by multiculturalism. A Chinese immigrant in New York City explaining his support for yesterday's nationwide immigration rallies. And finally, magician David Blaine describing his latest stunt, which started yesterday right here in New York City. Fellas, you've done a great job. Thank you all so much. We'll be back to do it all again tomorrow. And we leave you with that declaration, 3 years old now, from our chief executive, our commander-in-chief, our president. Have a good one.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Air America Mornings with Mark Riley.